This is The View from Tab. I'm Jim Menick.
I'm John Cruz.
I'm Chris Palmer.
I'm Mike Beats.
And Mr. Beats, as you may be able to tell, sounds a little strange.
He's reporting from a war zone.
Yeah, he's calling illegally. He's calling,
and the war zone is L.A. traffic.
He's in L.A. traffic. He has an illegal... Kids, don't try this at home, or don't try this in your car, or whatever. But he may cut out on us, but he's using a mobile Skype connection.
Actually,
because
the longest text message I've ever received in my life came from Beats while driving. Out of a perfectly typed, incredibly long text message.
Kids, don't try this at home.
What was that?
Okay. I was going to say, I'm not a role model.
No, okay. But we knew that, so we're okay. Okay, we have some things we want to talk about tonight. And
well, first off, I think we should give a shout out to Jim for directing an excellent tournament. Those who are at Bump, I thought it went very well, despite the host's typical grumblings. And
I thought my grumblings were atypical.
Well, you're always a little. I don't know if grumbling is the right word then, but I thought the tournament ran very well. Everyone had a good time.
Yes. I agree. This was my first Hen Hut, and I enjoyed it greatly, and I will look forward to coming back many more times.
Well, I thank both of you for actually helping run it as I was blogging.
Yes, this is really actually us just complimenting ourselves.
You did the good work. And this is something...
Tab rooms were fabulous. I don't know how you did that.
I taught you both everything I know. I've been blogging this, and I'll just make a comment, and then I'm going to not whine about it anymore. But this year I found that there was an awful lot of coaches trying to pull a fast one, or totally inept, people who didn't know who was on their bus, didn't know when their judges were coming, things like that. It was just beyond the pale for me.
Is it me, or is it getting worse?
From the perspective, I mean, if I have nothing else to go by but the objective measurement of fines, I miscounted. I mean, last year we had $370 worth of fines, and this year it was almost $100 more. So the fines went up about 25% that I was charging people.
I think it's the biggest fast one. I just want to interrupt and say that a fast one that I think is just totally unacceptable, and I've really grown tired of this because it's repeat offenders at tournaments that Bronx Science goes to. But the thing that I'm getting really tired of is people putting untrained judges in to judge. In any event, I don't care if it's varsity or novice. There comes a point that if you're at a tournament where that it's not a one-day league tournament that has a judge training session, sending untrained judges is just unacceptable. And I'm actually really sick and tired of the same people who do this then claiming and trying to take the moral high ground that LD is destroying itself because parents can't judge and making it sound like people are against parent judges.
Yeah, it has never been about parent judging. It is about
incompetent judges.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I started out as a parent judge, and I know plenty. I mean, Brad Taylor is a good example now. Everybody ranks him very highly. You know, they want to be judged by him. He's a parent. He happens to be a parent, but he also happens to be a good judge. There's nothing about being a parent that precludes you from being a good judge. But there are schools that do not train their judges, and then they turn around and exactly what you say. They're saying, well, you know, that's ruining LD by making your judges have a brain in their head and know what they're doing. They don't train them at all. They give them no exposure.
I almost think it's a setup. Because these are the same people who then say preference systems are bad and strikes are bad and blah, blah, blah.
And all of whom take strikes and do
the preferences.
Let's take
the worst judges in the universe. And they are the worst judges in the universe because they don't know what they're doing. And then go in and judge.
But nobody's going to know what they're doing. Before I started judging. When I was a parent, when my daughter was doing this, the coach at the time had a special training session. We all went there that night, and we had demonstrations from some kids, and she wrote on the board and blah, blah, blah. She was very conscientious. This was Phyllis Hirth, and she was very conscientious about training people to judge before they judge. Nowadays, we have every tournament we have, every MHL, every CFL, we give training to people. So training is there. They don't even have to do it. The lazy bastards don't even have to do it themselves. We'll do it for them, but all they have to do is schedule that they come to these places. And this is so, it's not only unfair to the kids, it's unfair to the parents who are coming to judge, who don't know what they're doing. They feel bad about it. They don't like not knowing what they're doing. They're like, you know, they're smart people. They just don't know how to do this thing. And throwing them in here and expecting them to figure out. We have written materials that could be disseminated to them. I've written, you know, how to judge. Joe Vaughn has one for Scarsdale. We have plenty of information on this stuff. They don't even give them that. They don't do their own parents who they're counting on to take the kids to tournaments, to chaperone. They don't do them the common courtesy of even pointing them to the materials that are available. Very irritating. Very irritating.
Well, not only that, we also offered PF judge training. I led mm-hmm. the PF judge yeah. training at the tournament, and mm-hmm. about four or five judges went, and those yeah. four or five judges did a fine job. We watched them because I remembered them, so I read their ballots afterwards. Mm-hmm. And then we kept hearing all this crazy stuff happening. There was a judge who said, well, you know, I just fundamentally agree with the pro, so I'm going to vote for pro, because, and I don't think you could have convinced me otherwise, even if you had been brilliant mm-hmm. to a PF team.
Yeah.
Like, well, dear Lord, I mean, what are they supposed to do at that point?
I told you, my favorite conversation was with this person who said to me, you know, you should have judge training for public forum. I didn't know what to do. And I said, well, we did have judge training. And she said, well, I didn't go to it. You should have judge training because I didn't know what to do. But we did have judge training, and you didn't go to it. Yeah, well, you know, it really makes people disadvantaged if you don't have judge training. And I had this conversation, and I'm like running around, and this person buttonholes me and like has this conversation. It was the most bizarre 5 minutes of my weekend. And
well, if he didn't listen to you when you announced when the judge training was, then he didn't yeah. listen to you when you were telling him you had it, right? At least he's consistent, right?
I mean, it's just crazy stuff. This crazy stuff was going on more than usual. I mean, like they say, the disorganization among coaches, you know, signing up for a little tournament that's, you know, a one-day tournament or something. But this is an expensive tournament for people to come to. I mean, there's food involved, there's housing, all this kind of stuff. How do you not know who's on the bus? I mean, I had schools that gave me multiple messages. Everything, you know, like changed twice. After they were on the bus, the registration changed twice. And then they got there, the same school got there and changed it again. So, I mean, and I wouldn't have minded if it was like, you know, it wasn't like Bronx Science who had 500 people. It was a school that had like three people. You know, so it was like, it was another three people. Like every time they turned around, they changed a couple of them. So it wasn't even the same three. They kept changing all the time. So it was like three different ones twice. So it'd drive you crazy. I mean, just absolutely. Anyhow, enough whining. Is it getting worse? I think it's getting worse. I do think it's getting worse. And I think sent an email to Beats, and he's made a good comment about this, which is like, we fine these people and then they take the fine as like a reason to get away with it. Okay, I pay the fine so I can be as much of a screw up as I want to be. And we don't kick them out of our tournaments.
Not yet, anyway.
Well, one of the things I'm going to do, and we'll talk about this, putting this as a feature in Tab Room, but actually getting Judge... you know, what have you done in the past? And I want a list of those tournaments that they've done. I'm just going to have some judge training, and they have to have some experience. It's just not fair to the kids. And there's too many opportunities for them to get the training somewhere else. And what we do is then we reward that school by giving them all the judges who are trained from all the other schools. And we don't use their judges because they're not trained. So their judges just sit there and eat donuts for 2 days. That's a lose-lose situation, as far as I'm concerned. Anyhow, we have a topic.
To be clear, when you say judge training, you don't mean like they need to become excellent flow judges. You mean what does a flighted round mean?
Yeah.
What are the times? Like, that's at a minimum, especially in public forum, that's what you're asking for when you're saying judge training. You're not saying everyone needs to bring in a judge.
No. I'm just saying, somebody, exactly what you said. They know about an A flight and a B flight. I mean, for LD, I mean, I'm only going to use them in novice, but then you have an idea. I mean, let's face it, the novices at my tournament are novices that who have debated twice, you know, so it's not like they're all that experienced. So all you have to have is a vague idea of values and standards and, you know, timing and stuff like that. And that, you know, give them an idea that they should try to take notes. And how to write a ballot and stuff. Yeah, very basic stuff. Nothing about making them into a great judge. I mean, that takes years to be a great judge. To be an adequate judge in a novice takes 15 minutes of training and some experience and some exposure. I mean, when we have our training sessions at the MHLs, first we show them around. We don't say anything. We show them around and we escort them. We give them an experienced varsity kid to talk about the round afterwards. Then we give them some training. So we go through a whole song and dance, but I still just consider them to be novice judges. You know, and they get to be better as they get practice. Anybody gets better.
We can go into this further, but Lexi Green brought up the idea about actually charging everyone for a higher judge. You tell us who you're going to bring as your judge, and we say, okay, we'll hire them. And hiring them means that we will forgive you your judge fee. So the tournament director can then have some quality control. Like it puts the onus on the team to say, this is who I'm bringing. So with that, you could like say they have met these minimum requirements and those sorts of things, and then you say, yes, you can. We'll forgive your judge fee. You can go ahead and bring that judge. That way, there's some control at the beginning. I don't know if it would work in PF, but or novice LD, but it's one way to rethink how we do judges, because we just sort of trust that people are going to bring decent judges. This at least would say, who are you bringing?
I think it's an interesting idea. My only concern about that system, because I remember hearing about this, I feel like Lexi may have told me this, or you mentioned this to me, is that if you're charging just the higher judge fee, right, some teams might try to pull a fast one and say, okay, fine, you hire our judges for us because it's actually cheaper for you to do that, because now we don't have to pay for housing, we don't have to do any of that, right? We just have to pay a fee, depending on what the fees are. Depending on the cost of those things in the term. It's just a thought. But I think the idea itself is interesting.
I think, like Mike says, I mean, it might work only in varsity, but at least it would keep a good, you know, I want my varsity field to be people who know what they're doing. I mean, you can have your own opinion of those judges and think some of them are better and some of them are worse, but nobody's going to say they don't know what LD is. And yeah, but I had a couple of adults come up there and say, you know, I've never judged before, I don't know what to do. And, you know.
And not only hadn't judged before, but had never been talked about judging. Didn't know things like you're not supposed to intervene. Yeah. Didn't know things like, you know, bring a stopwatch.
Yeah,
and I mean, the tournament required people to have judged before. That was part of the deal. That's part of the social contract. Yeah. At what point do we reach? What point do we reach where we say, okay, you have no trained judge here. That's a violation of the rules. You're going home now.
I mean, I'm
that's the toughest
the point.
Thing. Or you say something like, you're allowed to debate, but you can't clear. But that leads to other things. You know, it seems because, you know, things come up and the parent needs to step in at the last moment. But at the point at which they're repeat offenders, you know, I don't know. It's tough because I have a tough time looking at kids and say you can't debate.
I know. I hate to punish the kids because these are the coaches that are doing it, or absentee coaches who I don't even know why they consider themselves coaches. They don't know an LD round from a hole in the wall. They never show up at tournaments. There are some I didn't even believe still were coaching, and then all of a sudden you see them once a year at a tournament. They're taking no real responsibility. They're certainly not helping their kids. But yeah, I don't want to punish the kids for this. But I mean, I've had my thing where, I mean, we have our CFL grands, right, the qualifier for CFL, and we have a very competitive CFL, and we insist that people have three rounds. And the same school that sent me people who didn't know how to judge last year sent, you know, people there who had never judged before. Now, this is a rule that's been in place for 50,000 years. You know, this is like no surprise. This is somebody who is pulling a fast one. This is a sleazy, weaselly thing to do because they're too cheap to pay the money, or they're too lazy to go out and get a judge, and damn well they're too lazy to do it themselves because the coach isn't there. I'm telling the parent, go home. I did to that parent. I told him, go home. I can't use you. You're breaking the rules. I let his kid debate. But, I mean, I sent the parent home. And the other thing is, of course, the parent didn't speak English, so I don't know if he knew that he was supposed to go home or not. You know, so it's another thing altogether. But, you know, nonetheless, you know, I'm sorry. There I stuck to the rules, and I was able to cover the judging. But I'm doing, you know, like the tournament is doing a favor for these people who are doing no favors for anyone whatsoever, right, who just are so...
You know, at the same time as you hate to, you know, screw the kid over for an adult's mistake, I think that's the only currency that they'll understand. And at the same time, and on the other hand too, you only have to do it once.
That's true.
You know, if you prove to them that you're serious about it, then people will start taking it seriously. And then,
or they won't come back and screw them. I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah, I'm perfectly happy not to have these people raising my blood pressure.
And in addition to that, I'm not always convinced that the kids are really all that innocent in this. I mean,
well, I know some schools where the kids were the problem, but that comes and goes, you know, whereas, where it's the coach, it's the problem, it's the same problem, you know, for decades on end.
And at the end of the day, I'd rather screw over the kid who's from the problem program than screw over the kid who gets judged by their problem judges.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I mean, who's more deserving here, right?
Yeah. All right.
Sure.
Okay. No more griping. Oh, it was a wonderful tournament. I'm glad you guys enjoyed it.
Oh, okay. Yes, it was a lovely weekend. We'll come back.
Okay, well...
All right,
we'll
now that we've alienated all our listeners, we can talk about the appeal.
Well, we didn't alienate half of them because it was only half of them that are screw-ups. I mean, half of them are fine, but it's unbelievable that half of them are screw-ups.
Now, I just get the feeling we spent the last 10 minutes talking about things we've already talked about ad nauseum, so...
Yeah, well, that's okay. People are used to that from us. Okay, what we wanted to talk about in particular tonight was, I'm not sure what issue this is. I guess this is a month or two ago.
Issue.
Is it the
latest issue?
Is this the latest issue? Okay.
Yeah.
This is an article in Rostrum where Brian Manuel, who is local to us, I mean, he has worked over down the street from me at Lakeland High School.
Hosting the NDCA tournament, actually just hosted a tournament at Scranton this weekend.
Right,
he's
out there in Scranton. We're going to be out there with him in May or April, whenever that is. Anyhow, he wrote an article about TOC and the qualification process for TOC. And we've talked about how quals work now, and to some extent. I mean, essentially the way this thing works now is there's a handful of people who are mysteriously chosen to be on the TOC advisory board, and they get together and have a mysterious meeting, which the people that are on this podcast who are part of that are perfectly willing to share what goes on there, but there is no publication of what goes on there aside from that. And at the end of that meeting, at the end of that session, then it goes to, I guess it goes to JW, and he makes some decisions based on JW-ness, and then we have what's the bids are for this next year as a result of this. And Brian's making a statement here, which is essentially that this way of looking at it is just not the best way to do it, and that there should be more of an acknowledgement of regional debate. I mean, I'll quote him here for a second. Regional debate is the backbone of our activity. In light of budget constraints and the current economic crisis, many teams have been told by their respective school that they can't travel the exorbitant schedules they're used to doing. However, even though teams are traveling nationally much less, the organizations we value continue to keep their focus on nationalizing debate rather than regionalizing it. So in other words, money's tight, people can't travel, but nonetheless, we are picking tournaments that you would have to travel to succeed, and that's, you know, a bad thing. And also, I think there's other aspects of what he's talking about. But
well,
he
why
makes...
don't we start with that? Why don't we? Because there's a lot of ground covered here.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
I just want to say that. Okay. Well, first off, I like Brian Manuel a lot, and we have a lot of discussions about lots of things to debate. But I actually don't know if I agree at all with what he's saying in this article for a couple of reasons. I mean, I agree with the premise that we need to support regional debate. Mm-hmm. I don't know that changing the TOC is the way to do that, for a couple of reasons. First off, there is a tournament that supports regional debate. It's called NFL Nationals. It is a tournament that is completely about supporting debate locally and getting there through local success. I agree that it doesn't directly support local tournaments. It supports local district tournaments, but I'm not convinced that the TOC is the form in which to do this, especially because there's another tournament, the NDCA National Championships, and I'm on the board of the NDCA for the sake of full disclosure, but part of the mission statement of the NDCA is to support regional debate. So it's not that I want to say that all regions are not equal, you know, are unequal and whatnot, but Brian's system assumes that the same quality isn't really the word I'm looking for, but the same consistency of tournaments exists in every single region of the country, and that only those number of tournaments can exist in every region, in each region of the country. So I like the idea of supporting regional debate, but it seems like Brian is almost in some, to some level, like buying into the problem itself, right? Because the part of the problem with obsessive national circuit debate is that people are just obsessed with the TOC. So this just seems to reinforce the dominant position of the TOC, right?
So I read this differently. I
just want to say one other thing. The other problem I have is that, and this is something that I work very strongly to combat at Bronx Science, I don't like the idea that people treat tournaments purely, unless a tournament is like an NFL district tournament or an NCFL qualifier, I don't like the idea of treating a tournament as a qualifier for another tournament, right? Like, I think that you should respect the tournament as a tournament in and of itself. So we have a rule at Bronx Science that no one can debate for me unless they go to at least one tournament that doesn't have a bid. And that's a minimum requirement. What I find is that most of my kids, top or not top, want to go to more than one non-bid tournament because they like the idea of supporting tournaments in our area. And I feel like that's an important thing to do, and I don't know that this really does that. It seems to me like if you have a regional system like this, kids in your region, if they're still obsessed with the TOC, are just going to want to go to the tournaments that have bids.
But I'm going to ask you, I mean, you have policy teams, and I'm looking at this as a policy thing. Mm-hmm. And where in the region can you go to get a TOC bid?
I don't at all disagree that we would be hugely benefited from having
there are no tournaments, policy. Though. I mean, you have Lakeland. And you have Lexington, that's it. Where else can you go?
I mean, that's almost, you know, we can go to my tournament, but obviously we can't go to our tournament. But
I don't consider yours that regional.
You can go to Harvard, and you can go to a few other
tournaments. I consider Harvard a regional tournament. It happens to be in the region, but it's not a regional tournament.
Well, it's regional in the sense that it doesn't cost a whole lot of money for us to go.
Okay, so. But
so
I mean,
it solves that.
Whereas compare it to LD. Now, LD, I think the argument changes a bit.
That's my point about having these sort of like fixed, like there will be one octafinal bid. There'll be this number of this. There'll be this number of that terms. I just don't know that really exists in every region of the country. I think that instead you got to first build up the strength of these tournaments, regardless of what their draw is, and then you can talk about how to reassign bids. I feel like it's a little too top down. I guess that's the point that I'm trying to make. Doesn't seem to combat the problem, even though I think that the intention is obviously very good. Brian is a huge, huge supporter of local debate, which I think a lot of people don't realize because he's very involved in national level debate, but he's a big supporter of local area debate as well.
Do you think it's any more top down than the current system, though?
But the current system, I guess, isn't purporting to solve these problems. Does that make sense? Like, whereas the proposal that Brian has is purporting to solve these problems, and I just don't know that it solves those problems.
But do you think
the current system creates the problems?
I think it is possible that, I think there's a twofold issue. I think
that creates a burden on them, right?
I think that it is true that an obsession with the TOC probably has part of the effect that we see on local circuit debates. I do think that. On the other hand, only a very small percentage of people really do focus on the TOC. So I think that part of the issue here is also getting schools to support debate, which is not just an issue of, you know, of the TOC versus the NFL versus the NDCA or things like that. I don't know. That's my take. And I'll be quiet for a bit because I've been blabbering. The two of you guys talk.
Oh, who collapsed?
Dear Lord. Do you fall out your window?
Yeah. I look at this to some extent as this being in aid of providing, like I said, the tournaments in the Northeast, which is the only thing I know anything about. The Northeast had a number of policy opportunities 15 years ago that are virtually almost all gone. I mean, you know, we had my tournament had a bid, I think, at finals or something. I don't know. NFA had a policy bid, and they don't exist anymore. They're, you know, these the tournament's gone away. You know, and so, I mean, half the tournaments that one could get to without paying a lot of money are gone. You know,
how many total bid tournaments are left in the Northeast in policy? There's Lexington, Harvard, Bronx, Lakeland.
I mean, let's get Pennsylvania.
Right.
Pensbury.
You got Pensbury and Pensbury. Scranton if you count Pennsylvania. Yeah, and does Newark have a bid?
No.
No. Yeah, but I'm not going to – I can't count Newark and – I mean, I can't count Harvard and I can't count Bronx as regional tournaments.
Well, in policy, we're a regional tournament.
Okay, so – well, policy, yeah. But.
And they're also regional, again, in the sense of cost avoidance. So right. – well, though, on Harvard, they get it back in the entry fee that you avoid in transit. So it's not really that big. Mm. But – well, I mean, that's actually another question I had too is if you have a regionalized system – where does a tournament like Harvard fit into that? I mean, does the Northeast then feel we have to sacrifice one of our two Octos Bids tournaments to recognize the national draw of Harvard? Or does the fact that they're essentially cut off from our local region mean they get screwed over in the back channel, you know, and they don't have a prayer of getting any kind of bid because we all, you know, the regional coaches will keep them to the tournaments that we have a stake in?
I mean, I think you have to take those turns. I mean, you have to take a Harvard, a Glenbrooks, a Green Hill, whatever, out of the equation. I mean, if it's for LD, I would take Bronx out of the equation.
Right.
Because
I don't disagree with that, but Brian's system definitely does not recognize.
Yeah, I don't think it does. Mm-hmm.
Period.
Well, yeah, well, I mean,
let us posit a universe in which we are evil people who work behind scenes, right? And this system comes in. I mean, it is not unlikely to suppose that if there were a Northeast Regional Committee, that you and me and Cruz would all be on it. And do we then get to do things like take Harvard's Octo Bid and give it to Yale because we run in like Yale and we don't run in like Harvard? I mean,
but I mean, if I look at it now, look at our region. I mean, according to the way he has this, we would be in a Northeastern thing that goes down to Maryland. Okay. And it says two octafinal tournaments. Let's look at LD. Forget the policy thing. Two octafinal tournaments. We have that. We have Bronx. We have Harvard. Two quarterfinal tournaments. We have one. We have...
we have two. Yale and Lexington.
Oh, yeah. Yale and Lexington. Two semis. Yep. My own. And do we have another semis out there?
Columbia.
Okay. And one final. So we have a couple of extras. I mean... You know, more. Yeah. We have more than that in finals if you count the colleges, because we have Princeton, we have Newark, Scarsdale. You know, so we have a lot of finals bids.
Yeah,
but to me, finals bids are. I don't want to say we shouldn't have finals bids, but on the other hand, finals bids are really hard to get, and most people who get a finals bid somewhere probably already have another bid somewhere else. You know, it's because it's hard to get to finals. I don't care what the tournament. All these tournaments that have only finals bids still have, you know, 70, 80. Some of them have 120 people in them. You know,
well, and more to the point, you can have a really crappy field of 120 people, but if there are five good kids in there, then you're not getting a bid.
Yeah, exactly. So we know that the number we're going to get the more than enough people to earn that final. It's tough in that final situation. So I look at these numbers. I mean, it's pretty close, aside from the finals thing, it's pretty close to what we have already.
Well, I actually had a question about this, though. Yeah, then other regions maybe not. I had a question about this whole setup, though. It's if you're trying to regionalize debate and make debate more about having closer and more accessible opportunities, it seems to me that the easiest way to do that is cutting down on the number of Octos Bids tournaments and have fewer bids available at more tournaments.
Well, I mean, isn't that Beetz's thing? I mean, at least to eliminate Octo's bids from colleges.
Is Beetz still on? Did we lose him?
No, he's lost. But that was his thing.
He's lost to the netherworld.
Yeah. But he had talked about this, and I think he had proposed it at TOC or talked about it here or just talked about it on the side. But actually, I don't think we did mention it here, which was take away the Octo's bids from any college that had an Octo's bid.
Yeah.
Which... because these tournaments don't need the bids, so to speak.
Right.
And then
go further and use those bids to create four semis bids tournaments at high schools.
But on the semis bids are pretty good.
Harvard, or finals.
You can't give bids to a tournament. John's making this point. You can't give bids to a tournament that's not good. That's not. You know. you can't make a tournament where it doesn't exist. And I think this is a California problem where there's a lot of debaters, but there's not a lot of tournaments. So there's not a lot of bids there, even though there are a lot of debaters, because there aren't the tournaments literally don't exist to give the bids to. I mean, to have, and I think that's still the case. And I mean, certainly
well,
was
no,
the case, you know,
California has seen a significant increase in
okay,
bids.
Well, that was when I was on the board. That was the way it was, you know.
Yeah, it has changed. That's true. And
but that's a reasonable concern, though. You can't give a bid to a school that doesn't deserve a bid.
Well, that's my number one problem with Brian's system, is that by having a specific number in each region, it assumes all regions are equal. And I just don't really agree with that. I would like it to be that way. But I think that you first need to focus on building regional debate, not in a top-down way.
You can gerrymander this thing however you want to do it. I mean, if there's another point.
But it's not really a region. I'm not trying to be like condescending.
And it also makes you competitive with the tournaments in your region, which I don't think is great. But it also can encourage a real race to the bottom. Like, if all your tournaments in your region suck, then there's not much reason to improve, because all you need to do is suck somewhat less.
You have an octus bid, two quarters bids, the semis bid, the final. I mean,
well, take that out of it. I mean, how about just the idea that the TOC advisory board would be chosen by some other?
Well, that's a total. I mean, that's been proposed by many people besides Brian. So it's just, I mean, if we're going to ignore that, then we're ignoring the crux of Brian's argument, which is that we need to have this like bid distribution system. If you want to talk about other like transparency for the TOC? That's a different ball game, and I think that.
Well, I'm not talking about the transparency so much as just the whole regional aspect of it. I mean, because I mean, is the I don't know. I mean, who's on the TOC? Do you consider
the TOC advisory committee pretty good now for regional? Very regional. Oh yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's a question. That's a serious question. I'm not.
I'll tell you right now that the only regions that I really believe are truly unrepresented currently is we do have. Well, let's see. George Clemens is on the committee, so we do have someone from the South, but. In many ways, Florida is its own zone, in my opinion, and like the Deep South is its own thing, and I feel like we're a little underrepresented there. And there aren't really representatives on any of the bid committees in any events from regions that are very debate heavy, like Missouri and Kansas and like Utah and places like that. But a lot of that has to do with the fact that those people don't travel outside of their region.
Yeah, that's always been the case with the Midwest.
Yeah, Missouri's not allowed to by state law.
Right, exactly. And those are very debate-heavy places where I'm sure if those kids went to the TOC, they'd probably do quite well. I mean, some of the best debaters that I've ever seen at NFL Nationals hail from states that barely travel, you know, because of really restrictive state laws.
Well, that would be benefited by this system.
If the schools allowed them to travel to TOC in the first place. That's the problem.
They can't even go to TOC?
Often they can't. That's the point that I'm trying to get at, which is that
I think it depends if the school district considers it a national championship or not. You know, it depends on your definition.
It seems pretty. I'm looking at this. I mean, is the South? I mean, I look at these states. I mean, you know, Florida. I know there's plenty of stuff in Florida, but Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Kentucky, Tennessee, South, and North Carolina. They have much debate there. I don't hear people necessarily.
Well, there's a ton of policy down there.
Yeah.
I mean, Georgia is one
Georgia's
of the policy. Hotspots. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've got, again, it doesn't take much, too. In that region, you've got Emory, you've got Wake Forest.
I wouldn't count Emory as anybody's regional tournament.
Well, just like Harvard isn't. I mean, under the system, it would be.
And at least Harvard, you can have, like, people. I mean, you know, Emory, you can only have two people. You know, so.
Yeah, but they still have an Octos bid.
Well, in policy, now you can have four teams. That's sort of an interesting, perhaps, discussion for another time, like the quiet total change of the Barclay Forum for high school, where suddenly you can double the number of entries, which really? Well, I suspect that has to do with – well, I like the Barclay Forum a lot, but I suspect that has to do with – I suspect that has to do with perhaps declining numbers of policy teams and the Barclay Forum finally sort of waking up to that. Or it may – I mean, I really can't speak for the term. It may also have to do with the fact that, as Chris is saying, Georgia is – huge on policy debate. And to the credit of Emory, unlike most college tournaments, Emory does give back to the community. We don't really see it in LD, but in policy, they give a lot back to the community. And I suspect that perhaps it's also a reflection of the fact that allows more teams from Georgia to send more kids, which is a possibility. I've thought about that as well.
Well, I'm looking at, I mean, part of what Brian is saying, even if you take out all the stuff about TOC, I mean, it is the fact that, I mean, there are some areas, and of course he's in one, like, you know, Northeast is definitely an area where policy is going out of style. And, you know, there's fewer schools that have policy tournaments. It all connects to, everything connects to everything else. There's fewer tournaments, fewer kids doing it. I mean, even a school like Newburgh now has public forum and policy both. And public forum has a lot of attractions for kids starting out. I mean, you have this, John, where you have public forum and policy too. And, you know, all, and making, you know, when you bring in, you know, you have a vast group of people coming in, and how do you sort of funnel them into where they want to go?
I found it very difficult this year. It used to be very easy by saying, okay, you want a partner? Policy. You don't?
Yeah.
Excuse me, LT. Now, it's a little difficult.
Yeah, so, I mean, like I say, we've clearly lost a broad base of policy debaters in New York and, you know, around, I guess there's still some in Massachusetts other than Lexington, but I mean, Manchester doesn't have a real policy.
None at all anymore.
Yeah, I mean, they used to have a big policy thing. But you have, like, there is a Boston UDL, right?
So yeah, but they don't compete outside their cocoon at all yet. They haven't emerged yet to compete against Lexington.
Because we have the New York UDL that comes and goes, and so we try to get them into, you know, NHLs and stuff like that.
They've been around longer, and so they're more willing to compete in real tournaments. But for the most part, Boston UDL is limited to their own tournaments, which are exclusive to them, and they're still getting started. There's a new program just founded a couple of years ago, just last year, in fact, at Nashua North in New Hampshire, and there's Bishop Girton, but they mostly travel the national circuit. They don't compete in regional tournaments. They don't even come to Bronx. Yeah.
Bishop Girton, they made their return appearance this year, which I appreciated very much.
Oh, they did come. Oh, that's good.
Didn't they have a tournament, Bishop Girton?
I think they had a novice tournament.
They had a small tournament. It was more of a local.
Because they used to have a tournament. I remember UDL going up to it years and years ago.
They'll never have a huge tournament. It's a very small school. The school itself only has about 20 rooms or so. It's funny. My mother actually lives a block away from Bishop Girton High School, so I pass by it all the time.
So for whatever reasons notwithstanding, I mean, there's no question that there's just less opportunity for policy people.
Well, and never mind policy. We have a hard time finding LD rounds in our region. I mean, you guys have it much easier down in New York than we do up here. We're looking at a period. Where our novices, they'll debate this weekend at the Little Lexington tournament, and we have nothing in December on the schedule for them, and not much in January either, because the big tournament in January is ours, and they won't compete in it. And so next year we were talking about going down to Ridge and re-adding that to our schedule, which Sarah was not able to do before when it was just her, and now that I'm there, I can...
It's also the one at Byram Hills, you know, the week before your tournament.
And none of us are available to go to that one, unfortunately, because I'm going down to Florida and they're going to MBA.
Right, and it does conflict with MBA.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's really hard to find an opportunity to get a novice or a sophomore varsity, you know, a set of rounds around
here. John, you're talking about regional tournaments. We've been very lucky lately because a lot of people have started. But there's something going on every weekend, and there are tournaments. Like, we have a tournament at Byram, tournament at Ridge, where, bids are not the issue, and they're very popular tournaments, and, you know, a lot of good kids go to them just because they're fun tournaments. They're good tournaments, and there's good, and it's good experience. They have novice divisions. They have an open division. They work out very well. It's hard. We talk about starting tournaments, and we try to probably convince everybody not to start a tournament. But, you know, if a weekend does exist and you can somehow pull it off, people probably are going to go, you know. If you have a decent enough tournament, people, you know, will show up. And it sounds like Massachusetts could use some schools rising to the occasion. But you have what about the MFL, Massachusetts Forensic League? Don't they have a lot of stuff? But that's mostly speech, isn't it?
Yeah, the MFL is very speech-centric, and they run excellent speech tournaments. The MFL speech tournaments at minimum will have about 400, 450 entries.
That's good.
Sometimes the tiny ones will have like 300, but it's still very vibrant. And then the Hollyfest, which is the last school weekend in December, they go between 850 to nearly 1,000 entries, depending on the year and the weather. And so you have these massive, massive tournaments, and they're very well run, and they have them down – And they started introducing PF to these tournaments. And I did make a push to try to get LD divisions going, but it's kind of a chicken and egg problem. You need a viable division to hold the tournament, and you need a tournament to hold, have enough schools to create a viable division. And there's also the problem, I mean, if you have a tournament with a 950 entries, it's hard to tell them, well, you should add more things to it, you know?
they're pretty filled up, yes.
Yeah, pretty understandable reaction to say, Jesus, aren't we doing enough already? Yeah. So it's hard to get an LD round going in a lot of these tournaments because of that, too, you know?
Right.
I mean, how did these people, like in Missouri or whatever, where they have so much debate, how do they manage to have so much debate? I mean, they're doing it in school, though, right? I mean, they're not doing it on Saturday or something.
Doing it on Saturdays. They compete a lot because there's a culture in the state that debate is important.
Yep.
Georgia has a lot of debate now, and it's still building. And some people say that it's centered only in certain areas, and that may be true, but it's still has grown debate programs that weren't there before. That's because these areas support a culture of debate. One of the things I think is good about the new New York State Debate Coaches Association is that I think that eventually that organization can help grow debate in New York State. You need to have people who are willing to commit to debate in the area, to helping new coaches, to helping new teams. Sarah Sanchez deserves a lot of credit for her work with the Nashua North coach. I mean, I've spoken a lot with Vicky Payne, and she has been nothing but effusive in her praise of Lexington. Teams need to do more to help those kinds of things. What the MHL does in terms of waiving entry fees for new teams, those are the kinds of things that tournaments need to do.
Well,
that's way more important, in my opinion, than I say this with all due respect to Brian Manuel, who I love, but in my opinion, that's way more important than thinking of a grand redistribution of bids or repurposing the TOC. There are things that the TOC could do better, for sure, and there are things that the TOC maybe needs to examine. You know, the TOC advisory committee is not selected by the public. Should it be? I don't know. There are people who argue that the University of Kentucky has any right to do the way it sees fit. That's probably true. On the other hand, people have a right to determine what tournament they want to go to. And, you know, there are other tournaments that the NFL has elections, the NDCA has elections. But those opportunities exist as well. No, sorry, Chris, I need to cut you off.
That's okay. I think also in Texas and Missouri in particular, it's an expected part of the curriculum. I mean, when you are starting a new high school, you need to hire a certain number of things. And on the list at any high school in the country is like football coach. And down there, forensics coach rates with that. It's the same kind of thing. Well, you got to have one, right? Why do you have to have one? Because that's what high schools have.
Right.
And unfortunately, it is not so in this area of the country.
Yeah, I think that just gets the heart of the matter.
Yeah. I mean if you imagine
at the NDCA, I just want to say this real quick, and then Nicole, I was talking about the NDCA on our board, but that a big push, even though it is not going to happen overnight, but it's going to be a tough economy, really difficult to push this, but she said that, you know, the elephant in the room is that schools need to talk about debate classes and argumentation as something vital to have in as part of the curriculum. I mean, Texas, you know, Texans control our political system in so many ways. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Texas puts emphasis on having a public speaking and debate component to their state curriculum. I just don't think that's a coincidence. But anyway, Chris, I interrupted you again. So
No. I was just murmuring assent.
Yeah.
I'm murmuring assent too.
Those are points.
Well, is to some degree, I wonder if this is the sort of flaws we are perceiving or opining about in the proposal are an LDer's perspective of the policy world. I mean, the policy world has gone very small and very insular over the past 10 years as I've observed it, mostly as an outsider. And their idea of a tournament with a ton of schools is like 50, you know? And so to some degree, I wonder if they're just suffering from a little bit of myopia about wondering, you know, how many schools could they possibly have? Well, if they doubled the number that are active on the circuit, that would be brilliant. And that's where they kind of stop. And the number I always think about is 327. And that's the number of high schools, public and private, that there are in the state of Massachusetts. And we have nowhere near 327 active debate programs. In any given year, about 60 or so of those schools will register at one debate or speech tournament. And of those, probably half, maybe 40 are active, what you would call active.
Yes,
and those are the numbers that kill you, you know?
Poor debate.
Really uplifting conversation.
I mean, we complained about everything, you know. I complained about the coaches,
yeah,
the kids.
We're real happy people today.
Debate
aren't we?
Is going out of style. We can't get anybody to do
sucks.
It.
Everybody brings you bad
know,
judges.
Go, Brian Manuel, you can go to hell. I mean, you know, they just love you.
No, I love Brian.
Yeah, but not on this. Okay, so.
Well, on the other hand, to play devil advocate and defend the proposal a little bit, it would. I don't think I agree that the NFL is the answer to regional debate, because I think the NFL is the answer to very, very limited local debate.
Yeah,
it's certainly not the answer to New York debate.
You know, right, and the NFL, I mean, there are a lot of flaws with the NFL. The tournament's too long, it's too expensive, it excludes people who are still in school, which is us and you guys.
Right.
And it's not regional if my kids aren't competing against you guys' kids, you know? I mean, we are part of a region. We see each other all the time, but we're in
it's
different.
Like our, the problem with our district term is our even our local thing is not represented.
Right.
Yes, we compete against regional.
You both are in different districts, right?
Things, but, right, exactly. Mm-hmm. But our real local thing are MHL schools, and we're cut off from virtually all MHL, which actually makes it also very difficult for us competitively, because suddenly we're thrown against schools that we rarely see, but we do, you know, we see them enough at regional tournaments, but at local tournaments, they all see each other. They all know each other's judges, and we're the odd person out. So.
Right, right. And so I think there, I don't know, I'm not sure that there isn't room for something kind of reflective of the in-between.
I don't disagree, although theoretically, it could be the NDCA, but.
Well, how does the NDCA operate? I have to admit, I have no idea.
There is a point system that, the idea is that you don't have pre-assigned targets to the tournaments. In other words, the tournament qualifications actually reflect what happened that year at that tournament. So people think that the system looks complicated. It's really not. In other words, the strength of the tournament, like the points are determined based on the strength of the tournament as the tournament happened. And the idea here is that theoretically there could be a strong tournament in any part of the country and you could generate points from it. Now, of course, part of the point qualification system is to multiply how many states were involved, et cetera. So already you are having the issue of certain tournaments have more of a draw, certain regions are more consolidated, et cetera, et cetera. But
well, and also
theoretically,
like our region, it's easier to get more states because they're smaller.
Right, exactly. And exactly. And that's been a big criticism of that system to deal with. But the point is that any tournament, you could earn qualifying points at any tournament that you compete at, local, regional, national.
Okay. I mean, I mean, this will be the first year that I'm going to be going, so I haven't. That sort of sounds like an answer to some extent. I mean, at least it's an attempt to have an objective system of figuring out who should come to this national tournament.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
And because, I mean, let's face it, I mean, the NFL system is once a year I have a district tournament, and in my district, we're a red light district. I got one person's going to go, you know, so. I mean, that's a kick in the pants. You know, at least something there where, you know, X number of people can go because they qualify because they met some basic criteria that are standard throughout the country, then regions doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
I wish I could sort of fast forward to, like, you know, 10 years from now to see, I mean, how these tournaments are going to be progressing. I mean, where the TOC will be, where NDCA will be 10 years from now. I mean, I know 10 years from now, NFL will be exactly the same. Okay, that is no question in my mind. Whereas, you know, these tournaments, I think, are evolving and changing. It'll be interesting to see how they play out.
Fair enough.
Well, anyhow, I'm tired. And I'm sure anyone listening to this is long gone. I can't imagine anybody. If you are still there, you should get a medal.
Or get a life, more like it.
A medal and a life to wear it in. We'll see everybody. I guess it'll be after. Well, Chris, I'll actually see you this
That's
weekend.
Right.
But
it'll likely be after Friday night.
Would everybody else be after the holidays and certainly our loyal but tediously bored audience? We'll see them after the holiday. So take care, everybody, and see you next time.
Good night.
Cool. Good night.